Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Person has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on.
To go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann. With me always is Rich Krejci, and we are continuing our conversation on the top 50 greatest players in NBA history. We have back with us Curtis Harris from ProHoopsHistory.com. And before we get into our final players, Curtis, we wanted you to talk a little bit about something that you mentioned earlier offline that vexed you about the original creation of the top 50 greatest players list. So, so you have the floor. Please explain.
All right. Thank you for the floor. Yeah, all right. So my major problem with the NBA's 50 greatest player list in 97 was they're trying to whitewash and create some historical amnesia as to how the NBA actually started. Because like, they're like, oh, we started the 1946-47 season. It's like, no. That's when the Basketball Association of America, the BAA, got started. The NBA, National Basketball Association, that didn't start until 1949. And you just look at the name of the league, like, well, how did you go from the Basketball Association to the National Basketball Association? It's because they merged with the National Basketball League, and that had been around since the late 30s. And it's not just like a matter of names. It's also just a matter of like respecting what that other league brought to what became the NBA. So the first, good Lord, I think it's like the first five or six of the first seven NBA champions were all from the NBL. So like the Minneapolis Lakers, the Syracuse Nationals, those teams won also the Rochester Royals. Those teams won like the first, I believe, five or six NBA championships. And for the NBA to act like they just magically showed up out of the ether, like they didn't come from anywhere else, I think does a huge disservice to when you talk about what people contributed to what becomes the NBA. And the fact that it is, you know, today the Los Angeles Lakers, the Sacramento Kings, the Atlanta Hawks, Philadelphia 76ers, Detroit Pistons, and I'm forgetting the last team, there's six of them, but like six NBA franchises today started from the NBL. So the NBA, if they want to make this list for 50 greatest players, they should have waited until 2000 to do it, because that was 50 years after the NBA really got started. So yeah, that's why on my list, we can talk about, I don't know when, later on, whenever, when I made my list, I made sure to include people from the NBL because I consider that part of the NBA's history, the NBL and the BAA, they're both equal, probably NBL more so, not just equal, the NBL contributed more to what became the NBA. So they should be included when you talk about, the NBA's anniversaries, when those years happen and the players that get included in these discussions.
Yeah, definitely. Well said. Thank you. Yeah, and we're going to talk about some of maybe the snubs of the worth discussing at the end of the show. So I think we can talk about, you know, some of the players that you looked at, some of the earlier players, or just some of the, you know, whoever we want to talk about. I think we definitely could talk about that then. But first, we'll get back into the players that were on the top 50 list, starting with Dave Cowens, who is listed as bubble, although I could definitely see a case for him being on the likely side. He was kind of right in between there. Center from 1971 to 1983, actually did retire in 80 and then came back briefly in 83. All right, or more than briefly. There was a break there. He did win an MVP in 1973, although it is kind of a sketchy MVP because his production was significantly less than Kareem, and it actually was sixth in the NBA in win shares that year. So, although they had a very good team, so it's understandable, but I still think that MVP is a little bit of a bullshit MVP. He was a three-time All-NBA second team, one time on the All-Defensive first team, and two times on the All-Defensive second team. 118th in win shares and 136th in win shares per 48. Three times was a top 10 in the league in win shares, and it's kind of interesting because he is both benefits and hurts from being a Celtic, in the sense that I think he's both, you know, just because he's a Celtic, there's just sort of like an extra aura behind like anybody who played for the great teams in that franchise. But the teams that he played for are more the forgotten teams in the great Celtics history.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. Like I've had that in my mind, but I've never expressed it that way. That's a great way to think about it. Yeah, you know, great franchise, but these are the forgotten championships for the great franchise that he contributed to. And the MVP that you brought up, that was definitely dubious, to say the least. he didn't even make – I don't think he made the All-NBA first team that year. I think Kareem got the All-NBA first team, but he still got the MVP that season. So the voting was all kinds of messed up. I think at that point, I think players voted on MVP at that point, and writers voted for the All-NBA team. So maybe that's where that comes from. But
that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't deserve it. Yeah, he didn't deserve that MVP, but he got it. So good for him. and of course, this all, you know, this is like a turning into a pejorative term for white players today. But Dave Cowens did hustle his ass off when he played, like, truly hustled up and down the court. Like, that was his greatest attribute, was like the guy did not quit and was so fiery and so feisty. And you can probably count, like, genuinely count the number of games that this guy won for the Celtics for the sheer fact that he was just out there, like, just yelling and screaming and diving for balls. Like, the teammates were probably like, you know, we can't mess this up because Dave might lose his mind. Like, we got to win this game, otherwise Dave might not make it out alive. So quit in the late 70s for a little bit because he felt like, you know, I should be out here playing. Like, I am going to die if we lose this game. He's like, oh, I don't feel that way right now. I should retire for a little bit. And then he got it back and came back and felt good for a couple of years. So that was his best quality, that sheer determination and the hustle. And yeah, he's a bubble player though. Cause he did have an extremely long career at a really high level. And like he had some really good stats, but they weren't, you know, jumping off the page, especially his field goal percentage.
Sure. Yeah, he's a guy. Yeah, there's not much more to add. I mean, he doesn't really jump out, you know, true shooting wise among his peers. You know, he's 40th out of 43. field goal percentage, he's 36, and then rebounds per game, third. So obviously, the shooting not there, the rebounding there. He's an interesting one. I really don't have any other strong kind of thoughts or takes on him, but yeah, he'll be an interesting one to look at as we go farther. But I think he's solidly in the bubble and solidly one of the guys we probably will remove when it's all said and done. But not a bad career at all. Just, you know, for the purposes of this list, it'll be tough to kind of keep him along.
Yeah. So next is Patrick Ewing, who we have as likely. He was a center, played from 1986 to 2002, mostly for the Knicks. He had one All-NBA first team, six times on the second team, also three times on the All-Defensive second team, 39th in win shares, 97th in win shares per 48, had five seasons in the top 10 in win shares in the league, was a, you know, was definitely both an excellent scorer and defender. But, you know, didn't necessarily meet the lofty expectations for him. And one thing that's difficult is that he played in an era with some other incredible centers playing right at the same time, and does sort of fall short of the levels of those guys. But still, you know, very good and a, you know, shouldn't, and definitely, I think is, you know, likely to be on this list, obviously. Curtis, what do you think?
Yeah, first off, anybody that, you know, any Knicks fans that might be out there, or any people generally who think like Patrick Ewing didn't live up to the potential or were disappointed, that they need to get over themselves, first off, because this guy scored 20 points a game, over 20 points a game, until he was in his mid-30s. So, like, if you're getting that out of your center, like, you just need to be happy the guy was around that long to score you 20 to 25 points a game for, like, 15 straight years. Like, just – and getting 10 rebounds a game at that and blocking three shots a game at that. So, maybe he wasn't good enough to lead the team to a championship all on his own, but, like, the fact they didn't win a championship, that's not his fault. I think this guy did all he could. He left it all on the table. And if you knew me 15 years ago, this would be an amazing statement on my behalf, because I used to hate Patrick Ewing with all my heart. But after I went back, I had like a soul searching moment with Patrick Ewing, because like I loved Hakeem Olajuwon when I was younger. I still do. But I was like, well, Hakeem's the greatest and Patrick Ewing like opposed him in the finals. Ewing sucks. And I've gone back and looked at it and I've like reassessed Patrick Ewing. I'm like, you know what? This guy was. He was really, really good. Injuries got him at the end of his career, and that's when people started having the stupid Ewing theory stuff. It's like, yeah, if you remove an old center who's banged up, like, yes, your team will get better, but that's not Patrick Ewing being a problem. That's an old center that's banged up. Yes, it would probably be better if you had a young center take his place. But
right.
for the previous 15 years, like, the guy was giving you all he had, and, like, what else could you ask for? So I'm thinking this guy's definitely very likely, if not a sure thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think I'm totally in on Ewing, and I think he's a very likely guy for sure. And I don't see a scenario where we take him off. I mean, everything's kind of there. Stats wise, he grades out pretty well. I mean, amongst peers, he can sort of, he's not elite level, but he's sort of right in that next stage, you know, amongst in terms of advanced stats and stuff like that. But yeah, overall, I think what he did for that franchise and anybody that discredits, you know, what he did or what he was able to accomplish in his career, as you said, like I'm with you. I grew up a Chicago Bulls fan and I hated Patrick Ewing as a kid, but now sort of the objective mind of myself, I can sort of look at it and go, okay, no, this guy was really good, a really important player to that team and that franchise or whatever. And yeah, the Ewing theory is just an unbelievably stupid thing that I cannot believe continues to be perpetuated when, I mean, that guy had, yeah, like you said, you're replacing your aging center with no knees with an upstart center who then would stay in the league for what, you know, next 15 years. Yeah, that it's unbelievable that you guys would do better in that space. But yeah, so very, very weird stuff. Yeah, but I think Ewing is definitely a guy in the top 50 for sure.
All right, and next we have Robert Parrish, who we have as likely a center from 1977 to 1997, the most number of seasons in NBA history. That's gonna, we're gonna get a challenge on that pretty soon. A one-time All-NBA second team, one time on the third team, 25th in win shares, 80th in win shares per 48, had three top 10 seasons in win shares. And of course, again, part of the Celtics 80s teams that won three championships, was a, you know, very important player in all three. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's the chief. He's just a tremendous career, very long career. And Curtis, what do you have to add?
I think he's, I guess at the very beginning of this one, we talked about our criteria and I brought him up specifically as like, how do you judge the peak of someone's career with the longevity of their career? And I think, unfortunately, I'm thinking Parrish is more of a bubble, less of a likely guy, because his peak was pretty good. Like, it was almost 20 and 10, almost. He didn't quite ever get to 20 points. Got to 19.9, almost there.
But, oh.
never got there to 20 points. But, like, the peak just wasn't, like, superb. Like, it was really good. It was maybe great, if you want to say that, for maybe a year or two. But what he's got going for him is that he did play for just a really, really long time at a really good level. Like, you know, the guy's almost 40 years old and he's still, you know, starting for the Celtics and still almost putting up a double-double. So there's something to be said for that, but I'm not sure it's enough to get him as a top 50 player. So I'm a little more hesitant on putting Parrish on the list. But, you know, if you make... the longevity argument, he's the guy to go to, because, like, you know, there is something to be said for a player who can play for 20 years and be, you know, relevant and productive every single one of those seasons.
Yeah, he's an interesting case. He's the guy. Yeah, like you said, if we're gonna ever talk about a guy with longevity versus peaks and that sort of stuff, he's the guy, and he's the one you talk about, and he's the one you sort of focus in on, because yeah, he had as you mentioned, it doesn't really jump out in any statistical category. He's not, you know, in the all-time leaderboards for any sort of rate stuff. Yeah, he gets in there for minutes and some other stuff just because he played as long, but efficiency stuff, he's not quite up there. You know, among his peers, 19th in true shooting, 10th in field goal percentage, 18th in rebounds per game, 22nd in blocks per game. So, you know, it's you kind of get this just average among his peers, but average for 20 years or at least average to good for 20 years. I mean, there's got probably something to be said for that. So yeah, he's an interesting one. Yeah, Curtis, you said you would put him more on the bubble than the likely.
Yeah, like that's just me. Like, I think from a popular standpoint, I think he's more likely, just from like a general basketball fan's view. But just my opinion, I think he's more of a bubble person.
Okay, Jason, what do you think? Have you changed your mind at all, or you think he's one that we'll probably end up talking a little bit about more down the line?
I would still lean more toward likely, but I certainly see the case for bubble, and I, you know, he's definitely a guy who could get pushed down as we bring in more, you know, more guys as we you know, kind of consider things. I mean, he was really good in his late 30s. I mean, he had some really strong seasons. I mean, 1991, when he was 37, I mean, he had, you know, he had a 20.6 PER in 2,400 minutes. He had, you know, he had 10 win shares. I mean, he was really still producing well. And those, you know, those teams were still pretty good, even at that point. So, I mean, he was helping carry things along with, you know, along with McHale, along with Bird doing what he could do, you know, along with, you know, Reggie Lewis and young guys, you know, at that point kind of emerging. But I, you know, he was still a pretty strong force on those teams. I mean, I agree that the peaks are not, you know, there with what, like, you know, with what some of the elite big men, but I think he was very good for long enough where, and was, you know, important. I think this is definitely something where being part of winning teams was, you know, benefits him, but I think, like, you know, he deserves that benefit. So, but, you know, there's a lot of really strong big men who might be ahead of him that might knock him down a little bit. It's, you know, it's a tough call.
I got nothing more to add on Robert, right. Unfortunately.
I think we'll move on to our next choice then. Willis Reed, who we have listed as likely power forward and center for the Knicks from 65 to 74. Part of those, you know, very good Knicks teams that we mentioned. He is one-time MVP, one time on the All-NBA first team, four times on the All-NBA second team. He was once on the All-NBA defensive first team, which began in the middle of his career. 169th in win shares, had relatively short career, 78th in win shares per 48, which is stronger, and four seasons in the top 10 in win shares. You know, definitely some of the intangibles in terms of, you know, being the emotional leader of his team, or being the, you know, just being so incredibly tough and being, you know, tough-minded and focused that, you know, willing his, you know, team to greater heights than it may have otherwise achieved. The numbers are good, but not necessarily that stellar. Curtis, how do you feel about Willis Reed?
Well, he's, you know, bringing it back to Billy Cunningham from the previous show. He had a kind of a similar thing going on where he had like this 5-year nugget where he was just like, you know, one of the 5 to 10 best players without a doubt. And one year they thought he was the best player in the NBA when he won the MVP award. But that's only 5 years. So it's a great peak, but it is a fairly short peak. Cause the first couple of years in the NBA, he did get rookie of the year, but this is not his fault, but he had to share time with Walt Bellamy. So he kind of like slid over to power forward, and that was not his spot. So, but that's how his career unveiled, developed. You know, he kind of had to share time with that, and that kind of put a dent in his stats. But then those next 5 years, he was able to start at center, you know, be the man on the Knicks, and got them really well, got them to a really good spot, excuse me. But then the last 3 years of his career were just injury riddled. And he just didn't produce a lot the last 3 years of his career. So, like, I'm not trying to dock him points. So, like, the guy can't help if he gets hurt. He can't help if he has to, you know, share time with Walt Bellamy. But it is what it is. He had five, you know, truly, seriously productive years in the NBA. But he got two championships out of it. Stole a finals MVP, as we talked about. So, I hate to do it, Tony, because I understand the power and the value that he had on those Knicks teams.
Sure.
Like, truly do. But I think he's more of a bubble person as well when you look at just the totality of what he brought to the Knicks for the amount of time he did it.
Yeah, I'd probably bump him down to bubble as well. I mean, looking at, you know, advanced stats and stuff like that, he does not grade out very well among, you know, 18 of his peers, you know, forwards of his era. You know, he's ninth in true shooting, 10th in field goal percentage, 7th in rebounds per game, 7th in win shares per 40. I mean, he just doesn't stand out as much again, you know, against forwards of his era. And a lot of that is, you know, like the longevity and the injuries and things like that. But yeah, it's and Curtis, like you said, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we, you know, we're going to have to tackle through this whole project as well, is that, yeah, you can bring up like legit excuses. You know, the guy got hurt, this guy did this, he weren't played behind that, but it's all a part of the resume. Like, there's only so much, you know, those things count. You know, the fact that Penny Hardaway's knees, you know, went to hell, that counts. Like, we have to count that. So yeah, there's stuff like that. So, I mean, he's a guy who, yeah, you hate to kind of dock him for stuff like that, playing behind a guy, getting hurt, you know, doing that sort of stuff, but it's part of the thing. So yeah, he's kind of a guy that strikes me as, you know, we have him as likely now. I could see him sort of being one of the likely guys that when push comes to shove, we might be, you know, talking about removing him or moving him off this list, because I think he's a fairly easy one to sort of bump off if you really, really wanted to. But, you know, against this, the initial top 50 list, I don't know if he's so out of place, but on today's list, he might be.
Yeah, good point.
Thinking more about it, I am sympathetic. I think maybe more moving him more to the high bubble would make more sense. And I think the comparison to Cunningham is good, and I didn't really think about that.
Yeah, that's a great one.
But I do agree that, like, yeah, the lack of longevity is definitely kind of more of an issue than I initially thought. So I think that's so good discussion, guys.
All right, that's it, right? We're done. Our podcast on Willis Reed is over. So,
yeah. Okay. So next is... Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Knicks fans are going... Well, we said nice things about Patrick Ewing. I don't know if that balances out or not, or if that, you know...
I don't think so. No. As we remember that. I mean, people hate when we ever say anything bad about those Knicks, those 70s Knicks teams. They get very, very upset. We get, like, from the bowels of the internet, we get, like, people getting mad at it. Like, I don't know who these people are. And they're like, no, you... Like, it's... Yeah, no, the Patrick Ewing will not make up for that. No, we will definitely hear about this one. So, sorry.
Rich, what Knicks fan hurt you? You know, you have definitely, like, have a lot of damage when it comes to...
I grew up a Bulls fan, and they just, you know, I had to watch that stupid team all the time, you know, as a fan in the late, you know, 90s, early 2000s. They, you know, they weren't the most particularly fun team or engaging team again. And then, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Curtis is with me. They overrate. They love their history, and there's not much there.
I didn't say overrated. I said I just hated them. I didn't say they're overrated.
That's another discussion for another day.
We don't want to get Curtis in trouble. We'll go and take the heat for this one. But
all right, fine. Yeah, I'll take it then. That's fine.
All right. So next we have David Robinson, who is very likely, probably my first very likely to be in, at least in that tier for sure. Center from 1990 to 2003, won an MVP, was once Defensive Player of the Year. Also has four All-NBA first teams, two times in the second team, four times in the third team. Also four times All-NBA, All-Defensive first team, and four times All-Defensive second team. So lots of honors there. 14th all-time in win shares and second all-time in win shares per 48. Really impressive advanced stats. I think he's pretty much a slam dunk. Even stands up well against you know, the great centers that he played against, Olajuwon and Ewing. Curtis, what do you think?
Yeah, I remember when this was such a long time ago, but I remember when I first found Basketball Reference and I started, like, getting all these advanced stats and trying to figure out what they were. And I was just stunned at how high David Robinson ranked on all the advanced stats. I was like, was this guy like tailor-made for like the advanced stats they were creating, like PER and win shares and all this stuff? Like, because he just maxes out on every single one of them. But yeah, he's very likely to be on here. This guy was just incredible to watch. God, what was that nonsense? Like the 2012 Olympics? They're like, oh, could the 2012 Olympic team beat the 1992 Dream Team? And some idiot, I don't know who remember who it was, but it's probably just some jackass on the internet, who knows.
But he's like, fan. Oh, those, he's probably a Knicks fan, I guarantee it.
Yeah, probably was a Knicks fan. Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, oh, those centers from the 92 team couldn't hang with the guys from 2012. I was like, have you seen David Robinson play? Like, he was a center, but this guy ran the floor. Another great thing I read from Bill Simmons's book, like when he described David Robinson, like he just like just was like a battleship, just like, you know, just going down the court. And like that's the perfect way to describe him. Like he's from the Navy, so it fits all well. He's the admiral. And this guy just had like a purpose when he was going down the court. And like you just toss him the ball, he'd catch it, take two steps, and that ball is being dunked over people's heads. Like people today who watch basketball probably remember, like younger people, if they ever saw David Robinson, they remember him after the back injury. So he was a lot more stiff, was like the second fiddle to Tim Duncan. So it was like, oh, he's the role player. He wouldn't have won anything without Tim Duncan, which is true by that point. But the first half of his career, he was just such an athletic marvel. Like, I mean, I wish everyone would just go back and watch like a good 5-minute highlight reel of David Robinson. They would just see just unbelievable dunks, blocks, just movement. Just absolutely one of the best centers ever play. So this guy is absolutely very likely.
Yeah, he's a slam dunk for me. I mean, there's really nothing you can bring up that really taints his numbers at all or anything there. I mean, like you said, advanced stats love him. And it's not even just like the, because people bring up like the win shares per 48, which they love as well. But like even the ones that we've had kind of recently added to Basketball Reference and recently sort of gotten a lot more steam, like value over replacement player, he's first among his peers and not even close. It's 80.9 to a 57.7, which is just ridiculous. I think the second was Patrick Ewing. Like it wasn't even close. He's first in box plus minus. He's first, as mentioned, in win shares per 48. It's just everything that he does, you know, advanced stats love him, normal stats love, I mean, the guy, I think absolutely, he does get like underrated, it seems, by a lot of people, like people watching him, and like Curtis, like you said, a lot of that could be a lot of, you know, current people that are in the media or current writers or bloggers or whatever, our memories of him, and at least my memories, I can attest to that, a lot of the memories are, like you said, the post-back injury where he wasn't nearly as dynamic as he was. But yeah, he's absolutely, to me, a slam dunk for this list and top 50 all-time, no doubter for me.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'll be remiss if I didn't mention that Hakeem Olajuwon just totally kicked his ass in the 95 playoffs.
So. Yes, yeah, we did make a little note of that as well. That didn't help either.
I think that's a really major like contributor to the idea that he's not as good. His reputation isn't quite as good as it should be because of that. And yeah, I mean, he did. Although he played pretty. He produced okay in those playoffs too. But yeah, obviously Hakeem just smashed him for sure. So.
Yeah, that's overplayed. Like, Hakeem did clearly outplay him. And, like, I'm happy that happened because I love Hakeem. But that Davis caught a little too much heat for what happened in that series. Like, he wasn't the only player on this team. Like, the rest of the team kind of dropped the ball, too. So, but yeah. That shouldn't be held too much against him. Like, it happened, but it shouldn't be. That's not his whole career. So,
yeah. And those early 90s Spurs teams were really, generally really good too. They just, you know, they had some bad chemistry, especially with Rodman in there. And they had some other issues, but they, you know, they were perennial playoff teams and had some deep runs the Spurs have been good for a while.
We talked about that. There was another podcast that we had recently where we talked about where people sort of assumed that the Duncan era set off this great era of Spurs basketball or whatever. It really, I mean, David Robinson comes there, you know, first year I think they missed the playoffs. And then since then, it's other than the year where he was out, it's been clear since the moment he arrived there. So that's people kind of forget that. People kind of jump in on, oh, Tim Duncan comes and the Spurs are ready to go. Well, no, they were ready to go already with David Robinson. They've just been, you know, they've had this just gigantic run of success. Like you said, yeah, 3 decades now of doing it. But David Robinson's one of the big, you know, catalysts of that. So.
So next we have Nate Thurmond, who we have on the bubble, center from 1964 to 77, mostly with the Warriors. He did not have any All-NBA appearances, twice on the All-Defensive team first-team list, which came fairly late in his career, three times in the all defensive second team as well. He's 151st in win shares. He was never in the top 50 in win shares per 48, and was not in the top 10 in win shares or PER for his career. He is 11th all time in total rebounds, led his team to the finals in 67 along with Rick Barry. Actually was second in MVP that year as well. Other than that, though, not really. I was a little bit surprised in the lack of all NBA appearances, although, Curtis, I know you've mentioned, you know, obviously he was behind Russell and Chamberlain during that time, and I think he's done fairly well as you've gone through the 60s and 70s and done your, you know, what-if third teams for, you know, all NBA.
Yeah, he had the misfortune of getting stuck behind, as you said, Wilt and Russell during the 60s. Then in the late 60s, when, like, you know, Russell started to fade a little bit, Willis Reed then came up and, like, just kept him out. And then when Chamberlain started to falter a little bit, then Kareem comes in and keeps him out. And then Chamberlain had a little renaissance. And then by that point, Nate Thurman's, like, in his 12th year, so he's starting to fade. So it's like, well, too late. No all NBA teams for you. So that's like a decade stretch where he was the third or fourth best center in the NBA, but he had no all NBA teams to show for it because the one and two guys were always, they weren't, incredibly better than him, but they were clearly better than him. So it's just like, of course, they're going to get the first and second all NBA team nods. So that's unfortunately going to be a detriment against him. Not his fault. Also not his fault. Rick Barry going to the ABA. Terrible decision, because they made the finals in 67. Probably odds-on favorite to make it back in 68, but Rick Barry went to go play for his father-in-law in the ABA, so he jumps leagues. And so, well, Nate Thurman's opportunity for team success might have got a title. That went out the window with Rick Barry. And did, of course, in a cruel irony, like 75, he got traded to the Chicago Bulls by the Warriors, and then that's the year the Warriors won their title in 75. So, but that's enough of the bad breaks for Nate Thurman. He did suck at shooting the ball. There's no way to get around that. He was terrible.
Go ahead. I didn't know he was as bad as he was until I started kind of doing the look here, and I was like, oh boy, he's really bad. And it, like, historically bad among, like, all players, and then just, like, ungodly, like, turn, like, close the browser bad against, like, centers of his era. I mean, dead last in field goal percentage, 22nd out of 23 in true shooting, 15th even in free throw, not even a good free throw shooter. Just his really, really historically bad shooter for his position, his era, and pretty much everything. So,
yeah, no, but now he's a bad scorer, but he was I think in the end, he was a plus offensive player because he was a very good passer from the center spot. And like, let's not forget, like, he had the first recorded, emphasis on that, the first recorded quadruple double in NBA history. So that shows his versatility. Like, wasn't a great scorer, but he could pass it really well, rebounded incredibly good, and was a fantastic shot blocker, fantastic defender. So
and world-class hair. Okay. World-class hair and beard combo. That, like, follows the same line. Like, bald in the middle, but full head of hair in the back. I love it.
Like, did he put, like, a bowl over the front of his face and then just, like, trim the hairline?
I don't know how he did it. Like, it's – and, like, the combination of the beard, too, when he had the beard. Like, you know, his later years, he got rid of the beard. But it's just so perfect. Like, it's like, I don't know how he did it. Like, I don't know who told him to do it or how he did it. Because, like, nobody else really had that style. But it's a unique one. I love it.
That's when they still let him wear gold chains on the court, too. So he also has gold chains just playing the game. Looked like the coolest on court.
Yeah, that's my favorite memory. They have the video they play before Bulls games. They show Nate Thurman on there, which is unique because I remember looking it up and going, like, really? That's like a historically unique guy that we had to put on there. But I guess those were not the best of times. But yeah, he's wearing his gold chain. And like you said, the best part is there's a double team and he passes out of the double team. That's his highlight, is like somebody is double teaming Nate and he makes a great pass and his gold chain's flopping in the air. It's great with this little like pseudo horseshoe, like, way too above the head horseshoe hairstyle and beard. So I love it. So it gets on there for the double gold chain as well.
Yes.
So.
He moves from bubble to very likely thanks to the beard and
I'm putting him as very he's a shoo-in, so we'll add him to the I'll edit this part out and put it at the Jason and I, we talked about shoo-ins. We'll put him on that one. So
Anything else we have to, do we all kind of agree on the bubble or,
Yeah, unfortunately. As much as I love the gold chains, yeah, I think he's probably going to have to be bubble, but.
Yeah.
All right. Bubble, okay. So next we have Wes Unseld, who we have as likely, played center, from 1969 to 1981, was actually MVP in his rookie year, and made only one, all NBA first team, no second teams, 58th all time in win shares, 107th, in win shares per 48, five times was, top 10 in, win shares, and, he had four finals appearances in his career, including 3 in 5 years with one title, and was known for his incredible outlet passing and for his rebounding in defense, despite, you know, sort of being undersized and, as Curtis said earlier, square shaped. So Curtis, what do you think of Wes Unseld?
He reminds me a lot of Willis Reed, except he had some longevity to his career. Not as good a scorer as Willis Reed. Willis Reed did have some offensive punch, but he reminds me of Willis Reed in the way he led his team, because Reed, we forgot to mention this, like, he was, you know, quick to throw the fists at people if they start messing with his team. Wes Unseld wouldn't quite, you know, start throwing up punches, but, like, you know, just his presence, like, he would just walk over and shove somebody or just stand in between people, and that would just shut down any confrontation. So that counts, I think, a tremendous amount when you do also remember that he went to 4 NBA finals during his career. So he didn't score a lot, but he was a great passer, fantastic rebounder, great defender, even though he couldn't block shots as a center, still a really great defender. He just occupied space. And, like, you just could not score around him. Like, he would just take up that space. You had to find another way to get a bucket. You weren't going through him. So I think that should count for a lot. Whether it completely overtakes his lack of offensive scoring, I'm not sure. But I don't know. Just thinking about it at the moment, I'm thinking those 4 NBA Finals appearances, the fact that the Bullets franchise has been crap before him and after him, I think says a lot about his leadership qualities and how he kept that team together. Like, he had a lot of good compliments, like Earl Monroe, Elvin Hayes, Bob Dandridge, Phil Chenier, but he was the guy that was always there keeping that team together. And as soon as he showed up, they got really good. As soon as he left, they got really bad. So I don't know. I'm leaning toward a likely vote for myself with Wes Unseld.
Yeah, I'm going to go likely as well. You know, looking at a lot of the stats he did, you know, led the league once in field goal percentage. He's 7th all-time in rebounds per game, 13th all-time in rebounds, you know, 2nd in win shares among his peers, slightly behind Kareem. Kareem had 205.1 and Wes Unseld had 110. So, you know, right in the ballpark there. 3rd in value over replacement players, 6th in box plus minus. You know, a lot of stuff there. I mean, I think his resume definitely – scoring, you know, there's a lot there that could be desired, or at least, you know, efficient scoring wise. I would lean towards likely and feel like he's pretty much a guy that I don't think I would feel comfortable knocking him out of the top 50. I think, and the success too, like Curtis mentioned and Jason, you mentioned as well, the team success with Wes Unseld is remarkable. And the fact that he's still in a lot of ways synonymous with Washington basketball, like, you know, that's, I think there's something to be said for that, for sure. I mean, that guy has had a historic run on that team with that city, with the basketball culture of that city. So, yeah, for me, I would be hard-pressed to have a top 50 list without him on there. But I could see an argument, but I would probably leave him on there for sure.
And our last top 50 player is Bill Walton, who we have listed on the bubble. Center, played from 1975 to 87, had one MVP and also a runner-up MVP, was one all NBA first team, one second team, twice on the all defensive first team, and these all basically happened in the same season, 77 and 78, where he was an elite player, was the won a championship in 77, was the MVP the next year, then injuries robbed him of most of the next 5 or 6 seasons, but he was able to come back and be a key role player on the 86 Celtics. Was a transcendent player for a short time, but unfortunately injuries robbed him of most of that. He's not in the top 50 in win shares. He would be 131st in win shares for 48 if he had enough minutes to qualify. So, so Curtis, how do you feel about Bill Walton? Is his peak or uniqueness enough to overcome his lack of longevity?
I don't think so. If this was like the 50 most talented players in NBA history, I think he's in there without a doubt. But,
oh, sure.
Yeah, we're talking about 50 greatest. We talked about all of our criteria, how you like got to mix it in and come up with this magical formula. Like he had 2 great seasons, and even those seasons, he still missed a lot of games. And he had, you know, yeah. 2 great seasons with the Blazers. Then that 1 comeback year at the Celtics. But that's like, you know, that's 3 seasons of importance in the NBA. And I can't say, no matter how good they were, I can't say a guy that had 3. And one of them was as a 6th man. So really 2 seasons as, you know, a top flight NBA player. That can't get you on the 50 greatest list of all time. But, I mean, God, this is just something where you, like, you wish the guy did not break his foot because he was so, so good on defense, on offense, yeah. passing the ball, everything. Yeah, this is the player that you wish, out of all the players, at least for me, out of all the players in NBA history, this is the guy I wish had not gotten hurt, because I think he had the most to offer of those people that did suffer major injuries.
Yeah, yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I mean, sorry, you go ahead, Jason, if you want.
No, you go, Rich.
Well, yeah, it's a guy, I mean, for me, he's one of the first guys that I would probably take off. And not because, like you said, it's not because of skill. It's not because of what he could bring to the table. It's just what he did bring to the table. And that it wasn't his fault. I mean, it's a guy, yeah, it's a guy that you always think of as what could have been. And I'm right with you. He's a guy that's still to this day, I'm like upset that we never got the full Bill Walton. We never got the peak Bill Walton in the NBA. And it just sucks so much that it never happened. But yeah, he's hard to leave it or to put in because it's just, there's not much there. There's not much to really go on. There's the longevity's not there. The peak's good, but like, yeah, like Curtis, I think you brought it up too, is the peak's there, but it's, I mean, it really wasn't a full peak because we never really got to see that quite yet. So, yeah, for me, he's one of my first that I'd probably knock off, and by no fault of his own, it's just circumstance that got in the way. But, yeah, there's nothing to really tout or argue or do anything with that because we just didn't see anything. He just didn't play enough to really have an argument one way or another. But, yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, for sure. So I think we're going to close by talking about maybe some of the players who didn't make the list, who might be, you know, worth talking about and discussing. Curtis, you know, you created your own top 50 greatest players list, and so why don't you kind of go first about maybe some of the players who you feel like, you know, deserve consideration and didn't get so for whatever yep. reason.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll preface everything I'm going to say, like, you know, given my rant earlier, like I consider players who played in obviously the NBA, but also the predecessor leagues. So that would be the NBL and the BAA, and also people who played in the ABA. So I considered all those stats, all those pro teams, all the championships from all 4 of those leagues, considering this. As I consider all those 4 leagues to be like, you know, the NBA history, all 4 of those, I think, should be considered with that. So so with that said, let's see. I'll just highlight the people that didn't make the original All 50 team. I put Artis Gilmore on my list. This is a guy who had ABA MVP, ABA Rookie of the Year, ABA title, and has some ridiculous, like, win shares for 48 stats. I think he's 9th all-time. When you include NBA and ABA stats, he's 9th all-time in win shares per 48. So, and fantastic. We're talking about beard and hair combos. This dude also had a great afro and beard combination. So,
oh, yeah. So that's going to rank highly on my final list as well. His hair and beard is going to be and extra points for any jewelry that was visible during your playing as well. So,
yeah. And also, the best combination of like high scoring and high field goal percentage over the course of a career. Will Chamberlain kind of got there toward the end of his career, but his scoring was going down so much. Like he was taking like, you know, 10 shots a game and making 70% of them. But Artis was taking like 18 shots a game and making 65% of them. So he was, you know, deadly dunking the ball in with his hook shots. So he's, I think he's really an underrated player, both on offense and defense. Let's see, it's more players. Bob Davies. This is a guy that got, obviously gets kind of forgotten about. I won't even say underrated. He just gets forgotten about because he played in the 40s and 50s with the Rochester Royals. And he was a MVP in the NBL and then won an NBA championship in 1951 with the Royals. And was one of the players to really popularize, like, you know, between the legs dribbling and behind the back dribbling and passing. Bob Cousy gets a lot of credit for that, which he rightly does. But Bob Davies was doing that, you know, 5, 6, 7 years before Cousy showed up in the NBA. So Bob Lanier, a guy I felt should have been on the original 50 list for the NBA. We mentioned it earlier on the guards episode, but he played on some Pistons teams that, you know, kind of stunk, except for like, you know, a couple of years. But he suffered from some bad GMs. He also got kind of a little bit of reputation as like a difficult player to coach. But I think that was more on just Detroit being dysfunctional, because when he went to Milwaukee, he did a great job on that team at the end of his career. Didn't score as much, but he was like a rock solid presence in the middle, helped them get to some conference finals. So I think that kind of showed what he could have achieved throughout his rest of his career if he had some, you know, functional teams and franchises to have played for. Another guy, this is from the NBL. Once again, this is Bob McDermott. Will not ring a bell with pretty much anybody who's listening right now, probably. But he was a 4-time MVP in the NBL, 4 straight years with the Fort Wayne Pistons. So, you know, the NBA wants to talk about his history. Well, the Pistons is one of the, actually it's the oldest franchise that's in the NBA. And Bob McDermott, you know, he has a pretty solid case of being the best player to ever play for the Pistons. You know, talk about Lanier, Isaiah Thomas, whoever you want, I don't know, Chauncey Billups, whoever you want to throw out there. Bob McDermott might be the best player to play for the Pistons. 4 straight MVPs, got them a couple of championships in the NBL. And he was noted for taking shots from 30 feet out and was nailing them. So he was like the long distance gunner in his day. Like people just give him the ball, he'd chuck it up from 30, 35 feet, no problem, and he'd be making the shots. So really big time player. Gary Payton, I put on my list. I don't think I should say much about him. Everybody kind of knows about Gary Payton at this point. Pretty fresh in people's memories. Got Jim Pollard. He was a forward for the Minneapolis Lakers. So he got them all their championships. Like all the championships they won with George Mikan, they won them with Jim Pollard by his side too. So I kind of think of him as the simplest ways, like, you know, kind of the Scottie Pippen to George Mikan's Michael Jordan. If that's kind of the simplest way for people to think about that. But Pollard was one of the most athletic players in his day. Rumor had it, again, this is just rumor. Rumor had it that he could dunk from the free throw line, but didn't do it during games. Only would do it during only did it during warm-ups.
Of course.
Because again, like he'd even dunk at all during games. Like he could dunk. His nickname was the Kangaroo Kid as well. But he wouldn't dunk during games, because back in the 40s and early 50s, if you dunk during a game, you're just showing people up. And if you showed people up, they would beat you up during the game. So he kept it for the warm-ups. When the game started, there was no dunking. But I've seen some film of him, and this guy was athletic. Like he was jumping around the court. Like he was sliding between defenders, make some acrobatic layups. He was incredibly fast. So I think he's one of those players that if we have more footage of, we could show it to people. He'd get a lot more resonance and a lot more credit for what he did for the NBA. Then we got John Havlicek. Wait, no, he's on the list. Sorry. Leroy Edwards, another guy from the NBL. He was a 3-time MVP from the NBL. Played for the Oshkosh All-Stars. And we all know them, right?
Oh, of course. We just did a podcast weeks ago about the breaking down all our favorite Oshkosh All-Stars memories. So.
But yeah, no, this guy, he was left-handed center, stood about 6'5", 6'6", and he was putting up occasionally like 30-point games. I know that doesn't sound like a lot today, but he played in the 30s and 40s. And if you put up 30 points in a game back then, the average score both teams was like, you know, a 50 to 45 score. And if he's scoring 30 points, like, he is completely controlling the game, dominating the game, got a championship with the All-Stars, took them to, I think, four NBL finals during his career, and made like six or seven all NBL first teams. So he's like the first great player from in what is now the NBA. Similar story with Mel Daniels, except he was in the ABA with the Indiana Pacers. Got a couple of MVPs with them and three championships with the Pacers. So I'm comparing a lot of people to Willis Reed in this episode for some reason, but he played at the exact same time as Willis Reed, played a similar style as Willis Reed, kind of the intimidator center, a little bit short for a playing center, but really would go to bat for his teammates, held the team together. And he got them three championships. And I think those early 70s Pacers were probably the best team in the NBA and the ABA when you look at their rosters. So I think he gets a lot of discredit because he did play in the ABA. And the last two players are Steve Nash and Vern Mikkelsen. So Steve Nash, again, everybody knows about him, pretty recent, just retired. And Vern Mikkelsen played with the Lakers back in the 50s. And he's a player that doesn't get enough credit for creating what we think of a, you know, a typical power forward. Because in college, he played center. But when he got drafted by the Lakers, they already had George Mikan play center. So first they were like, eh, let's try to play both of these guys at center. Let's see how it works. And it didn't work at all. Like, it was just a complete disaster. So the coach of the Lakers was like, John Kundla, he told Vern Mikkelsen, like, all right, Vern, I know you played center. Why don't you just play forward? But all I'll ask you to do is grab rebounds, play the other team's best big man, and set some picks. And if you get some offensive rebounds, put it back in. And that's where they're starting from. And eventually he learned to, like, to make jump shots to spread the offense, spread the floor away from George Mikan, and was kind of like the intimidator for the Lakers. Got into a lot of fights. So people got into fights before that, but there wasn't this idea of like, oh, we have a power forward. He's going to go out there and guard the team's best big man. He's going to grab all these rebounds. He'll stretch the floor. We need him to open up space for our center. And he was the first guy to really do that. So got four championships with the Lakers, made, I think, six or seven all-star teams, and basically created what we think of as the power forward position. So I think that gets him on the top 50 list in my mind. And so besides that, everybody else I got on my list is, along with the people that were on the original NBA list for 50 greatest players. And I should also add that I only qualified people who are retired right now. So people like LeBron James or Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan, when they retire, they will clearly make the list. I had to bump somebody off. But as of right now, I'm only doing retired players, so they're not going to make the list until they hang them up.
Yeah. Do you think Peyton would have been somebody who should have been considered on the list in 96, or do you think he was probably a little bit too early in his career?
No, he was just hitting his stride in 96, 97. He's unique in that fact. He was a point guard that really didn't bloom until he got to like 28 years old, like 27, 28. And then he just kept going. He was like 34, 35 before he really started to like really hit the skids. So I know we think of him as playing like, and he did. He played on those great Sonics teams from like the mid 90s. But he, as a player, like personally, he didn't get to his best until the late 90s, early 2000s, which was after the Sonics had peaked as a team.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, you know, only a few others that I think, you know, are interesting, you know, Dominique Wilkins, who I do think should have made the original top 50 list, but at this point, I don't think he probably, you know, would be on the, you know, he probably won't make our list just because he's a little bit too far down and was a little bit too one-dimensional. But, you know, I'm showing some bias there as a Hawks fan for Dominique, but I'm willing to go with that. Adrian Dantley scores really well in advanced stats. He's 33rd in win shares, 27th in win shares per 48. I remember that there was some interesting data. We'll have to look it up more deeply if we do a show talking about him, but the article that kind of showed like that he might have been a guy who was really difficult to play with, you know, even though he was such an efficient scorer and, you know, and shot free throws really well. He was just a guy who, for whatever reason, teams didn't play as well as they were expected to, even though he was, of course, on the Pistons teams that were successful, even though he was traded before they won the championship. And Dan Issel, who, if you look at just his NBA only stats, they're still pretty good. He's 42nd in win shares per 48, but if you include his ABA numbers, he's 22nd all time in win shares, 34th in win shares per 48. I think he's a guy who, you know, has never, as far as I know, has never really been part of that conversation, but at least I think he's worthy of someone who should be kind of thought about, like, in those terms as a possible top 50 candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one. Yeah, Dantley's one that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Curtis.
Oh yeah, like this. Like he was one of the last players I left off when I was making my list, and I like hated myself for doing it. I was like, I really want Dan Issel to be on this list because he never gets credit for being such a good player for so long. But I had a hard time getting him on the list. And another one, Neil Johnston, from the Warriors back in the 50s. He led the NBA in scoring three straight years. Was the best center in the NBA, I think, for those 3 years, and like, you know, the second or third best center for like a 6 year period. But his career was too short in the end. I hated leaving him off, but he only played like six good years. Then he like just blew out his knee. So that ended his career.
Made a note that he wasn't even on the 25th anniversary team either.
Yeah.
So he can't get any lower.
Yeah, I know.
Sidney Moncrief. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Moncrief was another one that we put on our list, and he's a tough case to make, but he's one that I think is worth mentioning. You know, 120th in total win shares, but 28th in win shares per 48, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, and unfortunately not even in the Basketball Hall of Fame, which is terrible.
Yeah, that's some bullshit.
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that is bullshit.
I was going to say that. Yeah, Sidney Moncrief ought to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Why is he not? Has anybody ever come up with an actual good reason, or
no?
Because they're fools.
Like, yeah, because like of all the Hall of Fames, like, I mean, with all the stringent, like, I get like there's a lot of snubs, but there really probably shouldn't be that many snubs in the Basketball Hall of Fame. But this is a pretty glaring one.
Like it is the Basketball Hall of Fame too, and he was really good at the University of Arkansas. Like he got
right exactly, yeah. Like, what is that's a big thing. Like the Baseball Hall of Fame is usually, I mean, it's just, you know, MLB stats and it's very stringent in the voting period. Basketball Hall of Fame, we see plenty of people on that list that are just there. A lot of it just for strictly college stuff. And Moncrief had a great NBA career and a great college career. I don't know what the hell you want from the man.
Yeah, Ralph Sampson's in the Hall of Fame. Nothing against Ralph Sampson, but if he's in the Hall of Fame, Sidney Moncrief ought to be in there, red carpet rolled out, let the man walk into the Hall of Fame.
We'll have to do a podcast about that soon. Get you on. It's clearly a tough topic. Well, we need to get the man in there. I mean, come on, what the hell?
Yeah. That's our next goal. First, we won the Warriors a championship by doing our first show on Rick Barry. We'll do a show on Sidney Moncrief, get him in the Hall of Fame, and then the Bucks will win the championship the next season.
Sure.
Yeah, that's how that's gonna work.
All right. Well. So anything more you guys want to talk about? I think we've hit this pretty thoroughly.
Yes, we have. Yeah, I have nothing else on my docket.
Let me make sure I didn't leave anybody out who needs mentioning. We're good. I think we got everybody mentioned. Of course, we probably left somebody out, but
yeah, someone's going to tell us. And
yeah, well. Curtis, you know, thanks so much for talking with us about, you know, all the great players on this list. And as you know, we keep doing this project and talking about newer players. Hopefully we can get you on again and chat about them some more. And, you know, and we'll obviously be bouncing stuff off of you as we debate this and, you know, try to figure out our own top 50 list. So thanks so much for this and for all the great work that you do. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank y'all. Y'all do some great work, too, man. These are people talking about this stuff. So much appreciated. Y'all do the podcast.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening and checking us out. And we'll be back again soon with more on the top 50 greatest players of all time.